Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I am your host, Christopher Gallagher. We're all here in terrific spirits. It's been a terrific week for Celtic in a number of ways. I am joined by Christopher Sormani. Hello, Christopher. How are you, my friend?
Terrific. It's a bit wet outside, but all good.
All good. Alan Edgar, you've just put a biscuit in your mouth. We'll let you finish it off, but it's terrific to see you, and we'll bring you in just a moment or two. We are going to talk...
He's now swallowed.
There we go. Alan, how the hell are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. It's great to be here. It is a bit dreek outside, and it's lovely inside, so all good.
Yes, absolutely. And it's going to be fun. We're going to talk about Real Madrid, Celtic's performance there, because there's a lot to pick over. We've got Stats Corner, clipped from the Madrid debrief from today. We recorded an extra podcast, and that's kind of all the things that we're doing at thecynic.co. We're going to look at the Champions League group as a whole, because when I came out of the stadium, I was pretty damn shocked with the score between Shakhtar and Leipzig, and we'll touch on some other things. Celtic versus Livingston might be cancelled. So, Chris, do you think it'll be cancelled because of, you know, incidents, accidents?
Because of current events? Because of current events, I would assume it will be cancelled.
The death of the Queen. The death of the Queen, which would mean the game would be cancelled. So we might touch on that, we might not.
The Livingston game?
No, it'll definitely be cancelled, won't it?
I would assume so, yeah.
I think it'll go ahead.
You think it'll go ahead?
I've no idea. I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, what is your favourite Smiths album?
You've genuinely asked the only person in here that doesn't know a Smiths album.
Yeah, and the joke completely falls flat because of the name of the most famous Smiths album is...
The Queen is Dead. It's a good album. It's my favourite Smiths album.
Not a big Smiths fan, clearly.
Clearly.
A bit morose for me. Ideal.
Perfect in this current climate. Let's just start with Celtic 0, Real Madrid 3. We're going to talk through our thoughts on the game. Honestly, the atmosphere at the game. You know, my young cousin was over from Canada, and we met for some beers beforehand, and we were talking about the atmosphere. And sometimes, you know, you're selling something to somebody, but in the back of your mind, you're like, I'm selling something that might not happen. But it really, really happened. The atmosphere around the stadium on Tuesday, Alan, was electric. Talk me through your experience of it.
Yeah, during the game, it matched the effort that was put in by the players, which we'll come on to. Pre-match, it felt a bit odd, though, I think. And I think the time frame between Saturday and Tuesday just felt like nothing. It felt like we finished up against Rangers, enjoyed the content from that lasted a day and a half, and then it was like 4 o'clock on Tuesday, and you started to think, oh, we've got this other one tonight. So it was unusual in that sense. As soon as you got near the stadium, you could sense that the fans were up for it. Really, really big crowd in very, very early. I think I get in maybe about 25 to 8, and the stadium was packed. And just during the game, it felt like it was harking back to, you know, we talk about it a lot, the Mark Lanier days. It felt a lot like that. The crowd was just behind the team, absolutely kind of willing them on as much as you could. And the players, you know, they did their bit largely as well. So it was a great occasion, a little bit bittersweet maybe in the end, but I think there's so much that we can take from it. But first and foremost, atmosphere was great, and hopefully we can, you know, match that for the next two home games at the very least.
Yourself, Chris, what did you make of the atmosphere, the kind of build-up to the game?
I would kind of tend to agree that the time scale between the Rangers game and the Real Madrid game was pretty short. I mean, I actually reminded myself to enjoy the result from Saturday because of the short time before it. But it felt like a proper occasion for me. You know, when you turned up, you know, there's been other games where you go and the atmosphere's maybe not quite what you think it's going to be. And certainly in the Champions League, I mean, we'll maybe talk about some of this later on. We're kind of lauded by sections of European support in terms of talking about the atmosphere and this, that, and the next thing. I think Tuesday delivered in that. I think it was, you could feel it. You could actually, you could sense the anticipation and the noise in the stadium. So for me, it was, I mean, I think when you look back in some of the biggest and best atmospheres, we tend to talk about the games that we win. So you maybe not looking back in this one quite as fondly as some of the other ones, but certainly the noise before the game started was up there with any of them.
Yeah, the roar with the Champions League.
Nobody does that like us. I mean, yeah. It's...
A lot of them boo it.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. Man City certainly do it, don't they?
Yeah, they've got any history, any heritage, you know. Mm. Fuck them.
I just love that it's... I was there by somebody I don't usually sit with. They were sitting beside me and I explained that it was like the Always Sunny at the start of Chardy McDennis, when you can just get all your frustrations out and you've got like a minute.
Yeah.
That's what that is. You know, shit going on at work that you feel that you can't vent at. Just wait till the Champions League tune comes on and just fucking let go.
Scream your heart out. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's how I felt. Like, it just, big game, big match experience, big match atmosphere, all of that really was exactly how I felt. And I felt like, you know, as I say, like my young cousin was there and he was taking pictures and, you know, his brother is, they were both born in Glasgow, but they moved to Canada at a really young age, sending each other, you know, back and forth and stuff. And it's just really great. And I'm glad it lived up to our expectations. Alan, question for you. Did we play how you expected us to play? Because we've been talking about, you know, going toe-to-toe with teams, and, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do that. There's a lot of ways that Ange can tweak and all that sort of stuff. But we just, it was almost like same again after Saturday. Or maybe it wasn't. What's your kind of thoughts?
I thought it was. I thought it was largely the same. I was maybe a little bit surprised at the amount of possession that we had. And I think a lot of that came to do, or was drawn from the fact that we won the ball back so quickly in so many occasions. Madrid were, for about 35 minutes, shell-shocked.
Yeah.
They were really struggling. They had no out ball. They offered very little in the way of a threat. And whilst we didn't create the clear-cut chances, and maybe one, and then a couple of other opportunities, you had Cal McGregor strike, etc. But we looked dangerous. We looked like we wanted to play forward, play quickly. Even in attacking sense, I think we were even a wee bit bolder potentially than we were on Saturday, which was maybe drawn from confidence. Maybe Ange seen a couple of things from Madrid that he felt he wanted to exploit. But the players from very early on in the game, maybe not the first 5 minutes, but thereafter, I felt like they started to sense that there was something there from them. And the way that they could achieve that wasn't by being cautious or maybe thinking, let's not get overexcited. It was almost like they were kind of backing each other up and actually started in the attacking phase anyway, doubling down on their principles. Out of possession when we didn't have the ball, I thought the shape was perfect though. It was really well executed. Defensively as well, we did exactly what we did against Rangers, and we allowed the two Madrid fullbacks to, if you want to receive a 60-yard switch, even though Toni Kroos making that pass is much more threatening than, I don't know, John Lundstrom making that pass. The ball still has to travel that distance. By the time you trap that and bring it down, we'll get someone over to you. We don't see that as a priority area. And I think that's somewhere where maybe we've made that adjustment this season, potentially for Europe, playing that little bit narrower, not being so fussed about going out and pressing wide. And it's quite encouraging to see you make the park a little bit smaller for us for the ball. So I thought it was good. And we talked about last week and on pods, not on pods, whatever, I just talked about being competitive. Try and give them a game. Make sure that you don't play your way out of the game. Don't do anything daft that kills it. We did the exact opposite. Obviously, it doesn't pan out the way we hoped, but there's a lot to take from that. And I think, I don't think it's Celtic fans like us just saying, oh, well, we tried really hard, and do you know what? They're just a really good team. I don't think it was that. I think it's a case of, do you know what? We didn't take our chances and we were punished. And that happens in football sometimes.
Yeah.
And it happened then. It could have went differently, and we can be disappointed in ourselves for that. But it's not us just saying, oh, well, we tried, they're a really good team. It was us actually saying, we lost that game 3-0 because we didn't take our chances. It's on us. And there's an honesty to that. There's something, you can take something away from that. And that's what I like. This isn't a hard luck story of just like, well, Real Madrid are just great, aren't they? There's so much more we can look at and say, next time we can do this, next time we can do that. You might get lucky and get that rubber green, but so much to take from it. I was really enthused. I was gutted in the night and maybe a wee bit frustrated in the second half, but that's just because Celtic are losing a football game.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, that first half specifically, there was a lot of... I dare to use the word pride, but, you know, we've been kind of through the ringer when it comes to European football, but it was a game that we took it to them, specifically the first half, specifically the first 35 minutes. How did you see it, and what were your feelings during the game?
I was delighted same as everybody, I was absolutely buzzing at halftime because of the way that we performed. And I don't particularly like those hard luck stories, you know, plucky Celtic did this, did that, the next thing. I think the point that Alan makes is the correct one, that it's about what you can take from that. And I think we've said in this in the past about when you go into these games, you know, the minimum expectation for me was not to get gubbed, right? And we didn't, because I also clarified on a podcast before, a 4-0 was a gubbing.
Yes, yes.
Some other team get beat 4-0. 4-0 was a gubbing, 3-0 is just a comfortable defeat. So
comfortable defeat.
I was reassured until that last sentence. Yeah.
But the point I'm making, and what I really liked as well when I got back in the car driving home after the game, was the manager's reaction to it. It was none of this, I'm really, really proud of my players. He just kept reiterating the responsibility he feels to bring games of this stature and performances of that, you know, the first half to the football club. It wasn't, you know, look how well we did. And I think that's dead important, because again, we've previously said it's about performing well and taking things away from that. And it's not about saying that's great, that's the pinnacle. It's about building on it and going forward. It's about saying from that result, you know, you can break down the mistakes, you know, that we made, you know, in terms of losing the goals and things like that. But it's part of the overall picture. What you take from that is we're a side who are kind of developing and building ourselves into European football. I saw enough on Tuesday to think that we'll be able to take it to other teams, certainly in the group as well. You know, one thing we also need to consider is how can we elongate the level of time, the amount of time we're able to play at that level, because that is an issue. Because I think in other games, quite consistent, it's been a fairly consistent when we play with intensity that we do drop off quite early in the second half. So that these are the sort of things that you take away. You don't go, look how great we were, plucky Celtic, doing that. You don't go, I'm happy getting beat 3-0, but you look at the bigger picture and say, real pride with how we handled ourselves, but how we're going to build on that. And I think, crucially, the players and the manager will do that as well.
Alan?
I think that's one of the key points, and that what do you take from it so that you can next time be a bit more competitive or, you know, do something else. I think the other one that would jump out at me as well, and hopefully it is one, because this is something you can try and look at and try and educate the players on for the next 5 games, is you're going to face adversity in a game. You might even go a goal down. How do you try and not make it feel very much for the players like you've put all that effort and you've played a team off the park, if you like, you know, if you want to use that phrase, you haven't got the advantage and then they score. How do you stop that from feeling like it's a cliff edge? And how do you actually try and just keep the players, especially at the time we lose the goal, because we then very quickly unravel and the game is very much gone then within 5-10 minutes.
Setting one kills it, yeah.
How do you then try and educate or try and inform the players that it's okay, go a goal down, try and just keep working, try and keep build your way back into it. You don't need to immediately, because we then started trying to be more direct. I think players started forcing it a little bit. Then we lost possession, we lost control of the game, and then it very quickly get taken away from us. That's something that I think you can, as a player, the 11 players in the park, the coach, everyone experiences that hopefully once, and then you take that lesson that maybe next time, it might be in a big game, it might not be, it might be, you know, you think about it, we handled it fine in other games. We don't need to go immediately and try and, you know, it's not a case of we need to attack ludicrously and just keep going and try and force the ball. You just keep trying to do the same things very much the same way. I did feel there was a slight shift after losing a goal.
Yeah.
And we did lose control. We started to just not do the same things that then took the game away from us. So I think when Real Madrid scored, I don't think they necessarily changed their approach. They would have seen the goal, to be honest, as one goal might do us here and we'll be happy, because they are a team that are happy to defend. So I think you try and use that against them a little bit as well, and don't make it, I don't want to say make it easy for them, because that really is unfair, but don't give the second goal away as quickly as you do. And I think we did encourage that a little bit by giving the ball away so quickly, rushing things. It did look a lot like the players felt that once the goal went in, they had missed their chance. And I think that's something you want to try and maybe educate and explain again, because domestically that's fine, but facing that at that level in the Champions League against a team like that, just to let them know it's okay. You can lose goals in that and it doesn't take the game away from you. That would maybe be a wee kind of point that hopefully we can try and work on, you know, as we go into next week and, you know, the games after that.
That's what teams that we've had, certainly at home in the Champions League in the past, have perhaps been able to do. I mean, you can rhyme off a number of games where we lost the first goal and then...
Rallied,
you know, and it's...
Eric, can I just jump and say, like, one of those specifically would have been when we lost 3-1 to Barcelona when Henrik Larsson scored, but we were 1-0 down and we were really... We lose a goal and we're rocking, and then Chris Sutton came on and just... He took control. Mm-hmm. And then we equalise. We go on to lose the game, but that's maybe an example.
Shakhtar, when Donati scores, we go one down.
Oh, we go to one down. Yarosik
scores.
Yeah,
I'm sure that was the same against Milan, wasn't it, when we scored in the... Maybe I'm wrong there, but it certainly happened in the past. And I think what comes... That comes with experience as well, mm-hmm. you know.
It's a young team as well, yeah.
It's not only a young team, it's a team that only had two players in it that never played Champions League football before.
Very good point.
McGregor and Joe Hart. So, in fact, so only one player who'd ever played for us in Europe, in the Champions League before. So, and I think that was important as well after the game. Callum McGregor had all the players out on the pitch and he was talking to them. And I touched on the manager's comments after the game. You know, when he was interviewed, how are they feeling in there? Are they dead proud of their performance? No, they're gutted.
Yeah.
That's important. McGregor standing as the captain, talking to them. He potentially saying some of the things that we're talking about saying, look, you know, this is the first time we've played here. You know, we'll build on this. We'll learn, you know, we'll learn how to kind of calm down or whatever. That was crucial for me. And I think that the reaction of the fans after the game was excellent. And the magnitude of that, I think, certainly weighed on the manager and the players as well. And that's really good to hear, because they weren't coming round the pitch looking for a lap of honour to say, you know, thanks very much, we get beat 3-0 off Madrid. It was an appreciation of us, and it was an understanding from us where we're trying to get to. We're not there yet, but we're getting there.
Do you know what I really like as well, and it's not even about the Real Madrid game, or see the clarity that comes from the players just doing that now after every game. It does now mean that there is no accusations of them doing it. So when we beat Rangers 4-0 at the weekend, it wasn't over celebrating, because we do it every week.
Yeah.
When we lost 3-0 against Real Madrid, we weren't, you know, it's not a loser's mentality, because we do it every week. So don't get me wrong, if they're doing it after a 2-0 home defeat at Ross County 1 week, it might feel a bit glib and they might cut corners and go around really quickly. But the clarity that comes from actually that just being something that we now do at the stadium every week, and we have done for a number of years, is you can see the kind of benefits of it there, that there's no outside accusations of over or under doing anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about the team and how we lined up, but even before we get that, the intensity, it's both a very important tool in our kind of skill set, if you will, but it's also something that can lead to that drop off, because players can't be that intense for that long. How do you kind of tackle that? And it's not a question, I'm not asking you that to answer it, but it's a question that every manager at this level, every manager that plays with this style, will always have to kind of come up against.
It's very difficult, because this is a relatively unique style of playing football, and as we see it as a strength, other teams will look at it and will try and use it against us. And Madrid and Tuesday might be a good example of it. You know, they might have been happy to say, you know, try and make sure you're in the game, you know, make sure it's 0-0, or and then the last half hour they will tire. That is something that might happen, because we have a good, strong squad. But you take Rio Hatate off, there probably isn't an equivalent to Rio Hatate at this point.
Exactly.
We might have it coming, but we don't have it at this point. You take off Jota potentially, do you have another Jota on the bench? At this point, we're excited about Hak Šabanović, but it's a very, very different prospect. So, yeah, there is what we see as a strength that other teams will use against you. But Ange kind of addressed that pre-match as well by saying, we might play another way, and you know, there's positives and negatives to everything. There isn't an easy answer, and I think you think if that's hard to do on a Saturday against Livingston, you amp that up more when you're playing Real Madrid, not because they're quicker, sharper, stronger, better, all of these things, but because not only is it physically tiring, it's emotionally tiring as well. That is the thing that people don't probably, we don't consider, because we think, well, we can see it if you're starting to tire, but when you start to get that emotional tiredness that comes from such a big occasion, the pressure of being on that occasion and being actually succeeding and then losing a goal, that probably does lead to that little drop off that you've seen. There isn't a quick answer to it. You can try and build the players physically, we can do over time, and especially with the age of a lot of these players, they will become more mature and they'll be able to handle it better. But you need a big squad and you need quality on the bench that you can then call on, so that if you make that change, not only are they almost as good technically, but they are vying for that. And
we're not far from there in certain regards.
I still think we're a good bit away from, you know, if you're talking about nights like Tuesday night, you're a good bit away from there. But we're much stronger than we were last year. We have much more strength and depth than we had last year. But next year, again, if you want to talk about keep building and how you can improve on this, you go and do that again next year and try and keep building that squad. So there's not a quick answer, easy answer to it, unfortunately.
Chris.
It's probably going to be one of the most pertinent questions about us in the Champions League, I think, because as much as there's a lot of goodwill after that game, I think there'd be less goodwill amongst the support if we keep doing that against Shakhtar. You know, and we play with that intensity. Now, I think taking your chances is really, really key to this, because that changes the nature of the game. But say we play Shakhtar and we have a similar first half to them and we're even more exhilarating, but we don't find the net. And then there's a drop-off in the 60th minute and they go up the park and score a goal. People are going to start to pinpoint that more, because it's very apparent, and it's been apparent in our biggest domestic games against them. Certainly the February game, you know, we blew them off the park 3-0. Then after that, I know the squad's different now, but after that, I think we were comfortable, but we certainly retreated in terms of the way that we played, and we were able to do that because we'd scored. That's going to be really, really key. Now, there isn't an easy answer to that. Some players just might not be able to naturally be fit enough to do that. You know, I mean, a guy like O'Reilly and Hatate are two guys who I think visibly tire in some of these games. Is there potential to build up their stamina and, you know, fitness? Maybe, but it might be that that's just the way they are, that they're at the kind of peak of their powers, if you will. Then the other option would be to have similar level of quality on the bench. Now, Abelgaard might be a guy who is of that quality in there, you know, and that might make a difference, because then if you're starting him and you're bringing an O'Reilly on, not an O'Reilly, just Matt O'Reilly. I hate it when people do that, actually. If you're bringing Matt O'Reilly on at 60 minutes or Rio Hatate, it's a different thing, you know. Yeah. So having those options there, good options that aren't going to reduce the quality of the first team, and then being able to bring on players might be a remedy to it. But it's the square that needs to be circled by the manager. And I'm not saying he won't. I'm just saying it's something that he'll be aware of, and it's something that we'll need to look at going forward.
I think I'd probably agree a lot on that. And I think one of the other things I was thinking on the way here as well is that there's a wee bit of caution that we need. I say we, I can only speak for myself, but I think very much on Tuesday night, as the game is unfolding, I felt like this team are, what we've thought about them is maybe true, and that actually we are really good. And particularly the first hour of the game, I was starting to think, by the way, this team are really fucking good. And I was starting to think, this group, you know, I was looking at the other score and I seen
full points.
Schwed had
full points in the Champions League group stage. That's what he was thinking.
So I think that's good and that's great. Stepping back from it though, and on that point, that's very much through the lens that all these games we'll play like that.
Yeah.
And we will face different challenges. We might face teams who, Leipzig, for example, if they get their act together under Marco Rose, will come and they'll press us much, much higher and much harder than Real Madrid did, and that will be then a different challenge for the players, because the onus then will be on the players across the back to do a lot of the really, really tough, important stuff that they maybe didn't face as much on Tuesday, because Karim Benzema had no intention of coming to Celtic Park on Tuesday night and running doggies between Hart, Jens, and Cameron Carter-Vickers. You know what? I've won, what, 5 Champions Leagues? I don't need to do that. It's match day one here. So they had a lot of that, whereas other teams will come and do that. But that's not to say we can't put in that level of performance. It's just it will have to be different, and we'll have to then face different challenges. And unfortunately, it's not a case that because we went toe-to-toe with the Pot 1 team for 35, 40 minutes, that doesn't then mean that, well, your Pot 2 team, if you do that for 70, and yeah, you will take your chance, and the Pot 3 team, we can put out our B team because we'll fucking horse them. Now, in my head on Tuesday night, that's entirely what I was thinking. But that's not how it's going to work, and it's not linear like that. But what it is really fucking encouraging. And I think what we haven't really mentioned, probably, talking about the game, the quality that we showed in the game, in spells, was genuinely, yeah, really, really good.
Rio Hitati is a player who came in really, really shone and had a dip. And he kind of put that in terms, he coached himself and basically said that's fatigue from the, you know, the Japanese season that I've had. But there were still some question marks on his quality. Seeing Tuesday night, he wiped them clean for me. He basically, Rio Hitati on Tuesday said, proved to me beyond a shadow of a doubt, he's a Champions League quality player. Now, beforehand, I didn't know if he was. I think a lot of them haven't played there, so you don't know. I mean, obviously, he did tire, but in that first half, the way he was receiving the ball, the way he was moving it around, not even just the Hollywood, you know, the first-time ball that he played from the Juranovic throw, which was phenomenal, obviously, but just his movement, you know, taking the ball, in tight spaces, yeah, knocking it off, and then moving again and receiving another pass, he looked absolutely top class, I thought.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, you don't know whether people are going to sink or swim. And we've been talking the whole summer about question marks around that opening Champions League game. And we didn't know who it was going to be against. And then all of a sudden, it's Real Madrid. It's the champions. It's a team with a lot of history, a lot of, you know, a lineage. And you've got guys like Rio Hitati. And again, as you say, it's not the Hollywood stuff. It's receiving ball in tight spaces. It's comfortable. It's not panicking. It's making the right decisions at the right time, which we'll come on to in a moment. But
and I mean, he lost the ball sometimes because he was trying to be brave and make passes that cut teams open. Yeah. You know, and
that's going to happen with a player like him because he's got that kind of ability.
But more often than not, he didn't do that. And when he does that and you can see what he's trying to do, you go, okay, I see what you were trying to do there. There's a risk involved in that, but there's a reward as well if it comes off. But just in general, he just looked, I mean, it's a cliche. I mean, he did not look out of place next to guys like Kroos and Modric.
He needs to wrap down that on the big platform games because otherwise the eyes of Europe, are probably, that's probably the big game in Europe on Tuesday night, mainly because of Real Madrid, but also, you know, Celtic Park, away, the atmosphere, etc. Fuck it, that's the kind of main game. Teams will watch that, and I probably agree entirely with Savani. I think if you were watching that and you were a scout in Europe, the one player I think you'd walk away talking about is the guy in the middle of the park that wanted the ball constantly, that wasn't Callum McGregor, because you would then look and say, what age is he? Where's he came from? He's the one that stands out there. Everything about him, age, profile, where he plays in the park, the bravery, decision-making, quality. You just look and think, aye, we'll have him.
We did the build-up for the game. We did the preview, and myself and Eddie Walsh broke down the press conference, and there was the quote from Ange where basically he says, high risk, high reward. And he says it in a sort of way of, I'm repeating myself, but you know my philosophy, you keep asking me the same questions, high risk, high reward. And if anyone kind of accentuates that, if anyone represents that, it's Rio Hitati, absolutely. The preview was on thecynic.co, and we'll have previews to all of the Champions League podcast, all of the Champions League games and all the big games moving forward.
Can I pay you a compliment, Christopher?
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
The preview?
I thought it was good. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
I don't mean it, sorry. I'll amend my voice there because I sounded surprised. But no, it was really good. I enjoyed it. It was a good way you got for the game Tuesday.
Can I surprise you? I liked the preview.
No matter what my tone was just a second ago. Regarding the lineup, the back five were as expected. I'd quite like to talk about Jens in a moment or two. But
so would I.
The back five were as expected. The midfield three were as expected. Were you shocked with maybe not Giacomacchi starting because Kyogo had obviously the injury, even though we saw him training, you don't know what his levels of fitness were, or just in regards to protecting him. Were you surprised Abada started, Alan?
I probably probably similar to my surprise that he started on the Saturday, to be honest. But, you know, I think Ange's probably just taking a simplistic view of it and thought, I've picked him in the last...
He's in form.
Three games, he scored two against Rangers, he's got a hat-trick the week before, so... You know what, I'll not complicate it and I'll just pick him again. And his trust in Dyson Maeda is quite clearly there whenever he needs him. So I think you'd be quite comfortable bringing him into the game.
How do you think that front three played?
I thought they were really good. I thought they were really threatening in terms of attacking space. I think at times maybe it didn't come off of them or they maybe did rush it. And I think some of that will be the occasion. And yeah. Do you know what? That is the difference sometimes. That calmness of striking the ball cleanly that you would every, you know, 90 times.
If it was a domestic game, I think Abada probably scores. I think Maeda probably scores.
Abada definitely scores. I don't know about Maeda. But I think it is that sometimes happens. I think the Leila Abada one, I think he takes it quite early and doesn't quite believe.
I think he was a little bit in two minds as the ball comes across. It's a great pass from Jota.
Who I think probably similarly as well, I think in moments was just a little bit reserved. It is different playing against Danny Carvajal than it is playing against James Tavernier. Sometimes that happens, but I thought they all worked hard, which is obviously what you would expect as a minimum, but they did exactly what Ange would want in terms of where they were and the spaces they get into. Maybe the quality wasn't there at times. I think with Giacomacchi, I would probably say that as well. But I don't think I wouldn't fault them. And they will learn from it. And they're all pretty young as well, with the exception of Gigi. Yeah.
They were a notch or two down from the midfield three, you know, in terms of the performance on the night. That's not me being overly critical. I think that's just a fact on the basis. Mm-hmm. I think the engine room for Celtic in midfield was what drove us, and I thought they were excellent. I would definitely agree with Abada and Jota. At Jota, there was a one point in the first half where he looked as if he was kind of trying to flick it up and flick it over Carvajal's head or something. You suggested nervousness. I don't know if he was trying to do something big on a big stage at times and maybe overthinking it, and that played into it. Abada did seem to me to be very nervous and in two minds with some of the opportunities that he had. And we've talked about Abada before. In terms of being a traditional wide player and taking a man on, he's not really that. So when he was up against the fullback, you know, it's not entirely his game. But again, you wouldn't be in Big Giacomacchi. I thought he had some nice touches and overall, I thought he had a good game and he brought the ball in quite well. But you know, as a three, you know, they worked very hard, but the quality probably wasn't there. But again, I think that's. I'm just going to repeat what you said there. Basically, they are young. This is the first time they've played there. They're developing, and you're going to hope that they'll take lessons from the game.
Just the other two things just off the back of that. One, I think Jota was really surprised how much he had the ball, because he had the ball a lot.
Yeah.
Probably not too far off how much he sees the ball domestically. Now, I think that would probably have surprised everybody.
I was going to say, do you think that they would have been under the impression that you're not going to have the ball as much, so therefore make what you do count? More than just like you're going to have the ball more.
Maybe I just think he did go into a little bit where he was too content dropping it off sometimes, which is fine because you know it keeps the ball, you go again. But Jota's a player in the team that you're looking at to those passes that you talked about earlier that you referenced. Those are the passes that he can do and that we want to see from him. What I would say in favour of Gigi as well, Militao really, really did not want anything to do with him.
No,
I don't think I wasn't probably as hot and. GG on Tuesday night. I think those big step-up games, I think, where he might have the challenge. But Militao really didn't want anything to do with it. He didn't want Giacomacchi anywhere near him. If he had the ball and Giacomacchi was near him, he just put it straight into the stand, which is quite unusual. He is a comfortable defender. He is comfortable on the ball. He didn't want anything to do with it. So, again, it's maybe quality.
Why do you think that was?
I got the impression that he brought Rudiger on to nullify Giacomacchi. I might be wrong, but when he brought Rudiger on, I thought exactly that. I don't think they fancy his physicality, no. And he'll match up with him, but which obviously Rudiger would, you know. But he dropped out of the game after Rudiger came on, so you probably didn't see
maybe
that.
Maybe it was
didn't see that contest, but I did think Ancelotti brought him on with that in mind.
Maybe Militao just was having an absolute stinker. I know we think about it from our point of view, but the amount of times he just shelled the ball at a part, it's very un-Real Madrid like, I have to say.
Get it to fuck.
Like us, circa 2006-07 with Gary Caldwell, but Real Madrid.
Jens and CCV, you say you wanted to have a wee chat about them. Thoughts?
There's a decision going to have to be made about between him and Starfelt. I think Jens is much better in the ball than Starfelt. I think he's more comfortable bringing it. Maybe not much better, but he's better in the ball in terms of carrying it and maybe breaking the lines that people perhaps want our centre-halves to do. I think Starfelt's a better defender. Now, with small sample sizes and all that sort of stuff, I don't think Starfelt does what Jens does for the second goal. I think Starfelt's a lot stronger in the challenge there. I don't think... I was going to say I don't want to single him out. I am singling him out, obviously, talking about it. But I think that's a snapshot where I think that Jens is a capable defender. Don't think he's as good defensively as Starfelt. But what I did see and what I really did like from him was... he was comfortable bringing the ball out. He's comfortable playing football out from the back.
Anticipation was quite good in terms of just, you know, cutting in front of people and maybe making a kind of interception.
But I think we're going to lose more goals with him on the side compared to if it was Vickers and Starfelt. So there really is a question. Do you want him to, you know, start attacks, bring the ball out more comfortably than Starfelt? Or do you want more of a solid back two?
It's getting that balance, Alan, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that, to be honest, that's pretty spot on. Jens will make more mistakes because, for a number of reasons, one, he is a bit more ambitious with his passing, but he does take himself sometimes into areas with the ball, and I'm not sure he'll step in with the ball not entirely knowing where he's going to go and hope that something fleshes out, which is what attacking players do and good centre-halves will do as well. But I think defensively, I think you're seeing a player that hasn't played a lot of football. Mm. And certainly hasn't played football at that level.
He's young as well.
So I think his upside is probably higher than Carlo Starfelt. But in the short term, I don't think there's any doubt Carlo Starfelt is a more comfortable defender. He knows what he's good at and he knows what he's not good at. And he's learned to work with that, which is really important, especially for defensive players. So I think Jens has got a high upside though. But the only thing that would give me slight cause for concern with Jens is that maybe just that physicality for someone who is... he's good when he knows the ball's there to be won, but I think sometimes he, unless he's touched tight with a player, sometimes he gets himself a little bit lost. I think you've seen that at County away in the midweek game as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
That I think he maybe just likes it when he's touched tight with a defender and it becomes a sprint or a race because he is quick, you know, for a big guy as well. He likes that, whereas I think he's one of those strikers that doesn't like playing against, you know... I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, see that... two centre-halves and they're not playing against a recognised striker, it almost makes them a little bit nervous because they think, you know, for 18 years playing football, I've always been touch tight or I've been the spare, whereas now the 2 years are kind of standing and we're waiting for a runner but we don't know where it'll come. It makes them nervous. It makes you think a bit more. That's maybe, I think, where he kind of, not worries me a little because that would be overstated.
Well, I mean, when Hazard came on, it kind of, do you think that affected them?
Well, he was certainly more...
well, I mean, because he's less of what you'd imagine is in regards to like a striker the way Benzema is, and he's more of a 10, I guess. Did you see anything from that made you think...
well, I think Benzema getting off a lot of people, I know it got a big way here, and I can understand that he is probably one of the two best strikers in the world, but he didn't really look like he was too fussed. Now, if he would have been on the second half, I don't doubt for a second he would have scored probably two goals because they had the ball in that area. But in the first half, he wasn't really contributing in any way for Madrid. So when they're playing like that, you're quite happy for him to be on the pitch. Yeah. And Wehe and him, for him to go off, for them to then bring on. And I know Eden Hazard, we follow the English Premier League a lot because where we are, and he was a once great player. Turns out he's still really, really good. Okay, yeah. So
that was the guy I was sitting next to. I said, who did they bring on? And he went, someone good. And I think that sums it up. I mean, it was... when Benzema went off, it's not like they're going to bring on some untried, you know.
Lyndon Dykes.
Yeah, they're not going to bring on Lyndon Dykes. So, yeah. And
what a laugh that would have been.
That would have been.
He still would have scored against us, to be fair.
That would have been really good. I think you're saying about Benzema, you know, I think you mentioned, you know, he's not going to run, you know, running in about defenders. It was match day one in the Champions League. Yeah. It was huge for us. These guys have done it. I mean, there's guys in that team that have won the Champions League four times. Do you know what I mean? So, aye.
I think even Benzema is like a microcosm of Madrid in the Champions League in that he doesn't have to prove anything there. He was quite content. I genuinely don't think he would have given a fuck that he had to go off because he knows he'll get goals in this season Champions League. But they brought on a player who probably does need to prove something a little bit. Yeah. And it's just like that kind of, just hang in for 60 minutes. Yeah.
Do you think you know, there's a lot to take from this. We've discussed it. We've talked about Celtic's quality and bravery on the ball. Callum McGregor, we've maybe not talked about enough, but he was, it was exceptional. Excellent. Yeah. Talk us through your favourite kind of thoughts on McGregor.
No, again, you start to roll out some of the cliches in terms of this performance, you know, and it was a captain's performance, you
love
know.
Love it.
They have to do it. I mean, and talking about Ange's side, right, and compared to Rodgers' side, Scott Brown was a great captain for us. He was technically far inferior to the three midfielders that we had on the park on Tuesday. And, oof, that rain's really coming down.
It's coming down, yeah.
It really is coming down. Honestly, it just came down really heavy and it interrupted.
We had the news at the start and we're getting the weather now. Yes, we might get a bit sporty at the end.
What McGregor and Brown are really different in terms of their temperament and things like that. But Brown's tenacity and drive and dig was his biggest thing. You know, technically he wasn't as good as McGregor. Whereas I think you get a lot of what was good about Scott Brown along with Callum McGregor's technical ability. Now, some people will argue over who was better, McGregor or Hatate. I don't really care who you pick, to be perfectly honest, because I think they were both exceptional. I would probably have edged out Hatate, but I would not argue with anybody that said McGregor. And I think that sums up where Callum McGregor is just now. Again, he's a Champions League quality midfielder. And he proved that again Tuesday night.
Alan, let me ask you this before we kind of move on. Was that the best half of Champions League football you've seen at Celtic Park? First half? First 35, 40 minutes?
Oof, that is a good question. Is the best I've seen us play technically against a team of that
quality?
A pot one team, definitely. Some of the football was just sensational. If you could take out, I rewatched the game, and obviously you know the result, you take it, strip it a little bit of that context. Really, really good to watch. And what I quite find really encouraging about it is the fact that it's all stuff we've seen. We've seen it on Saturday. We've seen it the weekend before. So it's not like they just really, where we've historically done it is we've raised our levels big time for these games and it's got as if crazy result. Now, they loved that on Tuesday, but it wasn't to be. But what a light is that when we play on next
Wednesday,
when we next play, we'll try and do the same things and they might come off, they might not come off, but we'll try and do the same things. And as much as that can be a criticism when it's not going your way, see when you're playing well and it's going good, that's really encouraging because it does give a clarity to the players and I like that. And I think there will be a benefit from it. Whether it will get us at a group, we don't know, but really, really encouraging. Players will be flying after it, I would imagine.
You've got a core group of players who are technically capable of playing at this level, whereas big results we've had in the past has almost been backs to the wall. Not all of them, but, you know, backs to the wall, defend for your life, cross your fingers and hope for a huge slice of luck. It's different this time. It's almost like you've got a feeling that they'll be able to go toe-to-toe with a lot of these teams, footballing-wise. And that's a different way of looking forward to the Champions League. You talk about the atmosphere in the stadium and Fortress Parkhead and back in the first times when we were in the Champions League, we had a lot of quality footballers. I'm not basically saying that they were all shite and it was just because the stadium was dead loud. But of course the atmosphere will play a part, but there's a feeling with this group of players, as I said, that they are capable of technically matching up some of these bigger teams.
And I don't mean this disrespectfully to other teams we've had like recently, but you really do trust these players. I think there's a trust from the support that they're going to do the right thing.
I think it goes back to what Samani said earlier as well, though, that we're all saying this just now.
Aye.
It's on the basis that, see all that stuff, that we make sure we beat the pot three team twice and we beat the pot two team at least once. So all this positivity is on the basis that we can do all that, but we can also be flat track bullies as well.
See what you'd said about trust. I would say that we're ready to take the leap of faith with them. Instead, I don't know if you can trust them because the sample size, as they say, is too small just now.
Leap of faith is okay. That's
but you're ready to take that with them because you think that they've got the ability to do it. But there are, without going for looking forward too much to some, there are circumstances in situations where it could go either way with us. I don't look at this squad of players and think that. I'd love to be able to go into any Champions League game and go, you know, like Madrid probably do, this is just going to be a win. We're not there yet, you know, and hopefully we get there.
Just to translate that for American or North American listeners, so man is ready to go to second base with Ange.
And on that bombshell...
You're going to need to tell me what the bases mean when we're off there, because I don't want to know.
I'm really glad I don't need to run through them on air.
We recorded a podcast today called The Madrid Debrief with myself and Christian Wolf, in which we looked at the stats and some of the tactical elements of the game against Real Madrid. It's available on thecynic.co as part of our coverage, which we'll be doing for all the Champions League games and all the big games. Here's just a little snippet from it.
The really interesting numbers is maybe not the usual ones. So just, you know, purely on XG, for example, Insat had a 1.03 to Celtic, 1.95 to Real Madrid, and all the kind of other providers. I put a tweet out yesterday, just like, you know, because just lost of them, six in total. And they all roughly said Celtic's XG 1, Real Madrid's XG, like 2, you know, high, close to 2, I decided. So, if, you know, the chances in the game kind of said, okay, a 2-1 to Real Madrid overall. So I think that was fair. But the really interesting part of the stats for me was possession stats. So Real Madrid and Celtic had almost the same amount of possessions. So the times they were in control of the ball, 87 to Real Madrid, 81 to Celtic. But overall, Real Madrid held the ball for almost 20 minutes longer. And Celtic.
That's a lot.
And that, so per possession, Real Madrid, every time they have possession, 30 seconds, Celtic, 17. And that, coming back to what I said, that is such an effective way of tiring out the opposition. Because, okay, so there's a few things in here. You can say Celtic tired. And they absolutely did. Some players more than others. But the interesting part is why they were tired. And there's a few elements of that. But to draw another stat in, I had a quick look at, like, see total passes in a game, in Celtic games. Like, so both teams together. And I went back to the start of 2021. So passes in this game was 1,354 passes. And the only two times a Celtic game has had more than 1,200 passes, it's quite a bit left, quite less, was the two games last season which went into extra time. You know, the semi-final versus Rangers and then the Midtjylland game, which had just over 1,200. And I think the other highest one was like St. Johnstone at home and because Celtic about almost 1,000 passes, essentially. So, but that kind of tells you that, and even I had it, okay, so in total, the ball was in play for 67 minutes in that game. The second highest Celtic has had in a game this season was 55 and a half minutes in the derby. Oof. And on average, this season, it's been 51 minutes. And even in those two like games that went to extra time, I told the ball was in play 65 minutes. So even in two games with extra time, in this game, the ball was in play two more minutes. And that, I think that comes back to Real Madrid. They keep the ball for so long, and it tires out the opposition because it's such a weird game stat-wise. Because if you look at, for example, how often Celtic got into Real Madrid's half, they got into Real Madrid's half more times than Real Madrid got into Celtic's half. They got into Real Madrid's final third 8 times more than the other way, and they got into the penalty box and controlled the ball 7 times more than Real Madrid. But still, Real Madrid's got 30% more passes, almost 400 more passes. And the shots are even, and the XG is quite even, but it's that ability to Real to hold the ball. And it's not just passing to centre-back. No. I pass it everywhere. You know. Yeah. So what that does to Celtic, especially in 25 to 30 minutes, they just have to run. They have to run to get to the ball, have to run off the ball. They have to make sure they move about constantly. And as soon as Celtic gets the ball, like, okay, they try to attack, but especially at the later stage of the first half, they don't keep the ball for long. You know, they have quick attacks and they keep doing it, but essentially, because Real Madrid is so good at keeping or hold the ball so much and the ball is in play so much, you literally don't have any breaks. Did Real Madrid just grind Celtic down? True sheer quality, really.
So that was just a snippet from the podcast we recorded this afternoon. And we're going to do a lot of coverage of these games. So thecynic.co, check it out for our subscription service, podcasts every day, and plenty more coming up. Our Champions League group, you mentioned it yourself, Alan, that when you came out of the stadium, and I mentioned it as well, Shakhtar winning away in Germany. Ugh. Oh, well, there's a smile on that face. Talk me through it.
Well, it's not a smile. It's more I think it's better than Leipzig winning, in my opinion.
Okay.
I just think...
Break it down, Alan.
It might make it...
Talk us through it.
...a complete battle for second, as opposed to Madrid clearly going to get, 15, if not 18 points, probably, especially the way Leipzig are playing. If Leipzig would have won, it would have put the two of them ahead. We... go to Leipzig on, I think, what, match day three. And we're away at a Shakhtar team that won next week. So I'm on the proviso that that is a big result for Shakhtar because A, Leipzig are absolutely stinking right now, but B, it was quite clearly a big emotional victory for Shakhtar as well. And I know the context of that, but they, aside from their quality, it clearly meant a hell of a lot to them. Mm. They had... I think maybe people have underestimated the support that they would have. Turns out, actually, pretty much all of Ukraine is backing just the Ukrainian team. It's not like, you know, other. I've seen a lot of testimony of people just going to watch it and supporting them because...
A lot of Polish people, folk, and...
So,
yeah.
I think on that basis, obviously, we've got them next week, so we'll see how it goes. But a Leipzig win, I think, would have been worse for our group. Take out the manager sacking, whatever. The likelihood is Leipzig will get better and they've lost one of their home games that they would have probably been banking on winning. So a draw would have been ideal, but by the same token, I'm not sure I hope I'm really wrong, but I'm not sure I see Shakhtar over six games keeping up that intensity and that form. So maybe not the worst result, but obviously we need to wait and see. But I wasn't as down on it as other people.
Mm. Chris, your kind of thoughts? I think Alan's laid it out pretty well now.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, I'm going to give another cliche. We just need to concentrate on what we're going to do. No, I see watching back the...
Generic English manager voice one there from somebody.
I always do that. I mean, watching back, put aside what the result is, a draw would have been better, obviously, right? Either the team winning, you know, that's not what you'd like. You would want them to kind of cut each other's throats. But what you take away from that, not literally, Alan, what I take away from that is I don't really know much about them. I don't now think that Shakhtar are a lot better than they are because I saw the way that the goals unfolded. Mm. You know, people also looked at that and seen Shved had got a double. Well, he was basically handed a double, you know. I didn't go, oh, Jesus, there, you know, Marin Shved's going to be superb or anything like that. So I think what you've seen is that Leipzig are in real disarray, and we've saw that they've really lacked quality from the semi-final of the Europa League last season up until now. But I don't think that necessarily means that Shakhtar are an excellent team. So I don't know how much it changes things, really, to be perfectly honest. I still think it's all there to play for, and we'll go and take these teams on our kind of own merits.
I saw that Shakhtar, they won 4-1, but they are... XG, the expected goals, the quality was around 1.4, I think, 1.3 or 1.4. So, I mean, that's really low, isn't it?
I guess actually quite high for an away team in a Champions League game.
Just mean considering they scored 4 goals.
I know, but it doesn't really work like that. You don't generally get
it.
You're the one that brought it up. We don't give a fuck about XG.
No, we don't. In fact, I think the stats folk don't even like XG because it's like the total mainstream bollocks stat.
You're supposed to not use it.
Sky Sports use it.
You're not supposed to use it for one goal, one game.
Once it made it onto Match of the Day, I think it was toast.
Yeah.
Absolutely toast.
Marco Rose being appointed the new manager, because I have to say that when Tedesco was sacked, I just had that advert in my head, Tedesco, dialing from the radio. Very localised comment, that one. But
Glasgow and the West people will get that 100% if you listen to Clyde.
Glasgow and the West.
Marco, I mean, like, so new manager bounce, and, you know, he's going to make them play, you know, he was obviously the Borussia Mönchengladbach manager, he's the Dortmund manager, he's now coming into Leipzig. He will get them playing a pressing game, Alan, he will get them doing kind of all the things that, yeah, the manager they currently had, or just had before, probably wasn't doing. I mean, how Marco Rose coming in is a bit of a pain.
Yes, I think it is. They really were underachieving. You look at their domestic results, you look at their opening to that, look at the chance they spurned last season in the Europa League. So I think it would have been nice if we could have maybe got another couple of weeks out of Tedesco, but it doesn't, whether he gets him fit and firing in that time, I really don't know. But another couple of weeks wouldn't have went amiss.
Yeah.
You probably don't want to face a team that have just, it did frustrate me a little how quickly they have brought in what is clearly a really talented manager as well. You know, but we just need to live with that. It's very soon that we play them. What, 3 weeks, I think, we're in Leipzig. So hopefully in that time, we have got a clear way of playing. That gives me more comfort than we don't know whether they'll get up to speed. We know what we're going to do anyway. That helps me more than you know, them being shite or slightly better.
If you're catastrophising, you go, Shakhtar are brilliant and they got them at the right possible time and now Leipzig are going to be really good.
That's exactly what I've been doing most of the day. Yeah. That's actually spot on.
Thanks for catastrophizing.
But I don't think it's going to work that way.
No. Well, that's the thing. And the point that you've just made there, Alan, we're going to play how we're going to play, regardless of who the opposition is. So, you know, just focus on us, as Chris says, in his weird generic English manager accent.
We go back to what we talked about last week and what probably everybody's been saying. The one thing we wanted out of Champions League match one was, and I used the kind of the word I keep using and going back to, is legitimacy. I think we've definitely got that. So other teams that will be watching that game will be now looking at how do we play against them next week. Will be aware that we were really good for that spell against Madrid, and they know that we'll have taken a lot from that, so they will be expecting us to play at that level again next week and the weeks after. So that is encouraging, because other teams will then need to prepare accordingly for that, and hopefully if we play at that level, we will take our chances, we'll potentially get even more. That's what we need to work on and work on that basis. And I think the players will have taken, as much as they'll be disappointed with the defeat, everything, they'll know that they can hack it at that level at least. And once you get that in your mind, I think you don't shake it. Once you've performed at that level once, you prove to yourself that you can do it. And hopefully you're seeing that, as, especially when Samani talks about the age of the team, you think about, that's my first Champions League game. I'm going to play a lot more. And that's what we need to hope.
Chris, just on Group F, it currently sits with Shakhtar Donetsk at the top, Real Madrid second, Leipzig, and then Celtic. Our goal difference is... Well, we're okay. We didn't score. Leipzig obviously got scudded 4-1, so they were embarrassed. We just lost.
Is that about the margin of defeat, or is it?
I think it's the four goals conceded. Right. Personally, you know.
We'll probably need to sit and write this down, but, you know, see, because a 4-2 might not necessarily be a scudding. I would still maybe say...
A 4-1 is a scud, mate. 4-2 isn't, I think you're getting on the right
side. Well, we're bottom of the group. So,
for fuck's
sake. Now, joking aside, though, after obviously we've taken on the top seed, we've performed very well. We've learned a lot. We've got a lot to kind of look forward to in regards to our next fixture is Shakhtar away, but that's obviously in Poland. Has anything changed for you in regards to this group and your expectations? Just because obviously how things have kind of played out.
I think next week will be a better barometer.
Okay,
yeah. Of where we are in the group, because of more what I said earlier on, I think we've already established that we can perform at a Champions League level in a Champions League game. But going away from home again, which has troubled us, and you know, away to Shakhtar, I mean, I think we've focused on the fact that they're obviously kind of playing in Poland just now because of the situation in Ukraine, and focused on the things that will benefit us potentially. And then we've obviously touched on the fact that there's a big support there, and obviously there's a local support. It's probably not going to be quite as easy as we thought it might be or hoped that it might be. So I think next week you'll get a better barometer where we are in terms of our performance against a team we're expecting to take a point against or points against. And that's where I am just now. I'm expecting us to go there and take some points. I don't know if that's more hope than expectation, but there is certainly, I'm thinking, we're more than capable of doing that, and I think that we can. Once the fixture's over, we'll have an understanding of how we're able to perform, you know. Because you said it earlier on, I don't know if I'm explaining it very well there, but you said it earlier on, these games will all be different, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like... It's not like generic performances from all the team. It's all going to be different. So it is a test because it's away from home and it's against a kind of an unknown quantity of where they play. How we handle that will give us a better picture of how we'll handle the rest going forward.
Yeah, fantastic. Ange Postecoglou, obviously Thomas Tuchel was
sacked. You're a big Sam Tuchel fan.
I'm a big double T fan. Yes. But Thomas Tuchel was sacked, and very, very. I don't. Has a club moved as quickly to appoint a manager with how quickly they appointed Graham Potter?
Leipzig
with Marco Rose, aye.
Leipzig with Marco Rose, of course.
You can imagine Tedesco saying, "Why is Marco Rose rocked up here today? Celtic dressed in Leipzig training gear."
Celtic with Ange Postecoglou. No, that was the exact opposite.
But just with obviously. Ange Postecoglou has been done a hell of a job at Celtic, a job that I don't think anyone... I knew you were going to laugh at that.
It's hell of a job. Hell of a job.
but no, the kind of job he's done in regards to last season winning the League Cup, and then, you know, what we've done this season so far with the football we've played domestically, fantastic, and obviously that performance against Real Madrid. Success is always going to bring interest, Alan. We can't get away from that.
I was wondering where you were going with this Tuchel business.
There's been links to, you know, absolutely. He's one of the favourites.
He's not doing the Brighton thing, is he?
No, he's one of the. What I mean is,
the Brighton thing.
No, the club don't matter who he's linked with, but success will bring.
What clubs he linked with?
He's linked with a couple of German clubs. Leipzig.
You can tell he's definitely convinced the Livingston game's not going ahead.
I
think it absolutely does matter. Sorry, Chris, I know you're getting annoyed with my interruptions here, and I apologise. I think it definitely does matter to correct you, the clubs that are interested. Brighton, I don't think you bat an eyelid.
Oh, aye. No, I've got. But what I mean is, like, ultimately, the more successful any Celtic manager is, the more he's going to be linked away, and that's fine. I just think some people, it's almost, there's a certain level of our support that we have that... just are worried about it all the time, and it's kind of like you just have to live with that, and with the players as well. And I'm not in any way saying you're wrong, like live your life however you want to live it, but from our experience, if you're successful at Celtic, player or manager, you're going to be linked away. You just have to kind of live with that, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, you can have successful Celtic managers who couldn't get arrested by an English Premier League team, you know, but there's success, and then there's success, and it's what we're talking about, what the capabilities of this side might be potentially. You're not signing, if an English Premier League club tried to hire Ange Postecoglou, it wouldn't be based on what he's done per se. It would be based on what they think he can do and the way that he's played and what he's done with us so far. You know, because as I said, I mean, Ronnie Dyla won two titles with us. Neil Lennon won, you know, several titles with us. You know, maybe that's a bit unfair on Dyla, but nobody's really was knocking down the door to give Lennon a job. You know, after he left us the first time, he went to Bolton. They were in total dire straits. When that didn't work out, where did they go?
Yeah.
So it's not just the success that we've got.
It's more than that, yeah.
It's more than that. And I think it's fair to say that Postecoglou is a guy that will turn the heads of a lot of clubs. What I will say, though, is there's certain club sides, you know, can you imagine one of the, you know, teams in a relegation battle going for Ange or something like that. I think he would want to go somewhere that he's comfortable, that he'll be able to do what he wants to do, because he's not going to go to somebody like, I don't know, pick somebody off the top of my head that might get relegated.
Aston Villa.
Aston Villa, right? maybe wouldn't have picked Aston Villa, but
I just, you know, they're at the bottom of the table just now.
They're fighting for their lives and things like that. You know, they're going to say, we want you to do this, we want you to keep you in the Premier League. I don't think he's going to go to a club that's not going to give him time, space to develop what he wants to do.
That's England. Fucking
no, and I know he, you know, you're exactly right. A Premier League job, you're not really going to have that bargaining power. But you do have that bargaining power to an extent before you take the job. This is what I'm going to try and do. This is how I'm going to try and do it. Whereas if there's certain teams that are desperate for a manager just now, they're going to go and phone him up and say, we want you to come down and do this. He's not daft. He's going to maybe look at that and go, it's not the right opportunity right now.
Alan, it's as what it is.
He's just smiling because he's going to say, he's going to do that thing with the money where you rub it between your fingers.
No, I literally see myself in February 2019 sitting on a train down to Newcastle texting my mate saying, nah, I don't think he'll go, mate. I just don't think it's the right opportunity for him. For me then to be gobsmacked when my phone went wild. He's a very much a vogue manager at the moment, Ange Postecoglou, because of what he's done, but rightly because of the way he's doing it. It is something that's very interesting. It's, I think people that are football people are very intrigued by it, and the fact that it's bringing success in a league that Celtic will always be successful in, but the way he's doing it, the style, the panache, and potentially now having a crack at Europe, he will be a manager that potentially after these group stage games will interest reasonably sized clubs in England. It's up to Celtic to, and that's why I was encouraged. And I think that Abildgaard signing, I know it's only a year, very late in the window, is the type of signing, I think I said, we maybe talked about it, is the type of signing previous years I think we wouldn't have made because we have enough numbers in there. But so I think for once, so far, we've done as much as we can within our kind of financial remit to make sure that he has what he needs on the field. As long as it's not like most managers have had previously where it's like you get a window or you get two windows and that's it.
Yeah.
That's you backed. Then we let you fizzle out and then we bring the next guy in. Continuous year-on-year investment in exactly what the manager wants, this manager wants, might be enough to keep him here for a hell of a lot longer than other managers we've had. So, yeah. But I'd rather have a manager that's successful and does attract interest than managers who are just do enough to get over the line, but everyone knows they're not going to go and cut it elsewhere.
I'm not going to open the can of worms that is the Celtic backroom and scouting stuff and all that sort of thing. But one thing about Ange is the kind of profile of player that he's signing isn't huge amounts of money, you know, whereas with Rodgers, he's like that. I want to sign Puccini, who was, what, 7-8 million quid, or Castagne, who he ended up taking to Leicester. What did he cost? Nine million?
No, I think he cost something like 11 or 12. So silly.
You're in this position where, and even, let's be honest, see, as a support, we were screaming at the board to say, you're not backing him, you're not backing him. And, you know, I'm probably still saying that just because of it's an emotional thing. But it's easier for the board to back Ange when he's identifying a profile of player like Matt O'Reilly, Rio Hatate,
Jens.
You know, Jens, because they're not massive amounts of money. They're within our remit. So, you know, again, not touching on what's going on in the background, identifying players that are within our financial window and seem to suit the manager's wishes and desires is huge in terms of being able to do that, because you're more likely to get money to strengthen where you want to strengthen if we can afford it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been an update from the SPFL and they are in contact with the Scottish English government, the British English government, the UK, in inverted commas, government, and they will... they'll update potentially tomorrow whether the game's going to go ahead. So it's not a total...
Surely they have a process for this. It's it's not a complete surprise, is it? No, I just mean in terms of the head of state, you would have a process for it.
I thought they would have an instant process where it'd be like... Well, but that gives me a little bit of... You know, potentially it might go ahead? I mean...
Well, yeah, you'll have something to talk about tomorrow if it goes ahead. So it's... I would assume it isn't. I mean, I'm pretty sure when... Princess Diana,
Queen of Hearts,
passed away. The calendar, the football calendar, was cancelled just after that. Somebody can tweet in if I'm wrong there, but I would assume that if that was the case, then it would be the case now.
Steve McGowan has tweeted, SPFL and SFA in continuous discussions with the UK and Scottish governments, our counterparts at the English Premier League and the English Football League regarding fixture arrangements in the aftermath of Queen Elizabeth's death.
See, you've got a vision
update
now.
Likely tomorrow.
I've got continuous discussion. I've got a vision of, you know, Liz Truss's cabinet. Hang on, we've got
Neil Doncaster
on the phone here. I'm pretty sure that's not happening. But anyway,
just before we finish up, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, right? See, we don't often talk about Rangers, right, in regards to just other than a derby, right? But his reaction yesterday, Rangers get absolutely embarrassed, and now look at what's happened to them. Maybe if they'd won, should be. I'm not happy with that.
It's not that I'm not happy with it, Chris. Just let it go.
His reaction in the post match. And there's been a lot made of it about, you know, Ange's reaction. You made the point about what he said and how he came across. He seemed a little bit disappointed, yeah. Which is good to see. It wasn't any of the sort of Gordon Strachanisms of get him a football and oh, the lads are unlucky and all that sort of stuff. It really was a case of like, we'll get them next time. Giovanni Van Bronckhorst really, like, I kind of watched that post-match interview kind of gobsmacked. From a real point of view, when the players, because they will watch it, see him talking like that, how would they react?
Language is huge when you're a manager of a club like Rangers or Celtic. A parallel I would draw to those comments was Tony Mowbray.
Yeah.
See the shite he came out with? That enraged me. And I imagine if I, you know, can't even envisage supporting them, but I imagine their supporters would be enraged because essentially what he's doing is...
We're here to make up the numbers.
Yeah, we're framing the expectations that he probably shouldn't do, and I can see why a lot of their fans would be absolutely raging, but terrific viewing for us, obviously.
Oh, love it, absolutely, delicious.
But for him, you know, these are the sort of things that if results keep going the way, we'll speed up his departure. So, you know, Gio, wind it in a bit. Wind it in a bit, mate.
Rein it in.
Because that will not go down well.
Can I just say, this is really pathetic, right? But see on Twitter, see that image of, what's it called? Murty. And it's like, oh God, I know that phone's going to ring. See every time I see
the
that.
The bat signal with Murty as well. Is he still there?
I think he left. I think he has left. But oh my God, it's just that. Oh my God, that phone's going to fucking ring. Alan, he just completely, he worked himself into a shoot, Alan, with that. I mean, it was really just some of the, and even the press conference before when they were talking about money and all that. It's just because this is ultimately going to affect us if, you know, their performances don't improve and how that affects their morale, them dropping points and everything. It's incredible to see.
Well, they're going to fuck the coefficient, which is obviously
very, very important.
Bloody disappointing.
Disappointing.
They really need to start doing a bit. It's not particularly... See, to be honest, I think if sometimes less is more, if you've, you know, you've two bad beats in a week, just fulfil the minimum obligation that you've got to do and just try and not say too much.
Yeah.
It's coming across a lot. He's coming across very, very honest, but it's also bizarre because it really is backing the board or the chairman or whatever the situation at Rangers is. He's not coming out saying, there's no hints of that he's not happy. He keeps saying how happy he is with the squad. It's just a bit bizarre. He's coming across just, I don't know, just a bit odd, to be honest, which is great.
Delicious.
Yeah, people think we've got lots of money in the bank. It's not true. See if you're not getting money to spend and you're not being given it and because there's no money in the bank, you just don't see anything, do you?
No, you just keep it quiet.
Like a bailiff at the door. I absolutely have no money.
From a Celtic FC woman perspective, there was no game this week. It's international break. But Claire Wilde spoke to Lucy Ashford Clifford, who's the new signing, who's started really, really well. This week, we play Dundee United in Dundee, but that's more than likely going to be cancelled as well. But I've got a clip for you from...
Jesus, is it, man?
Nah. He's waiting for Neil Doncaster to text him back.
If anyone knows if the amateur game, Carlandon Scotland, they'll be off this weekend as well.
You'd be delighted to do that.
Absolutely. Friday night.
The Celtic Women's Football Show records and drops every Wednesday. And as I say, Claire spoke to Lucy. Here's a little clip from that interview.
What do you think about in the Scottish game? Maybe you haven't been here for long enough, but you know, what can be done to kind of promote it even further? Obviously, we've kind of got the new league and all the new branding around that and stuff. Is there anything that you feel that you've seen elsewhere or that you would like to happen up here?
I think, I don't know if this is just a Lewis thing, but we seem to draw in like good numbers in crowds. But not saying there's not a lot at Celtic, but I think we should definitely have more. And they'll love it. I think if because I get like the Rangers and the Celtic thing is so big, and I didn't realise how big that was. So I think like especially if we had when we play Rangers, if we can get like a huge crowd, because that's like that's a nerve wracking game. Like everyone like is up for it. And if we had more fans than them, then yeah, it'd be pretty tasty.
It's interesting you mentioned that rivalry. Obviously, we're playing Rangers much later in the season than we have before this season. And you said you didn't, you sort of didn't realise. Do you think it won't really be until you actually have a fixture against them that you really kind of get to grips with that rivalry? Or are you kind of seeing it from the men's game stuff? Obviously, we've got a derby coming up this weekend.
I was not aware of it at all. Like, I thought Man United and Liverpool was like the worst one, but I've heard like this is like serious. Like, this is unreal. I think I noticed it when we had that cup final, it just seems like it's progressively getting more and more. Like, you see it on like social media and just they hate each other. Yeah. I think it's great.
What do you think are your personal ambitions for this season? Obviously, the team and the squad and the club and Fran's got ambitions within the league. What would you like to achieve this season?
Probably the same as Fran. I don't know what is ours, but I'm assuming like winning the league. I would love to win the league.
Couple of trophies as well.
Yeah, Champions League. Just all of us doing what we can do, like not letting points slip, not getting complacent. I think that would be a big thing because if we are pumping teams like 8-9-0, like I don't want everyone to think, oh, this is going to be every weekend, because I think we got a shock to the system when we played Partick, and it's just making sure that we all stay humble and respect the opposition and respect each other, and then we'll all get the best that we can do out of each other.
Fantastic stuff there from Claire. The Cynic Women's Football Show drops every single Wednesday as part of our subscription service. There is a podcast every day and beyond, so check it out, thecynic.co. This has been fantastic. As I've said, the Livingston game looks like it's going to be cancelled, which is disappointing. But we've got next week, obviously, we'll be talking about the Shakhtar game. So that'll be fantastic. Aye. Very, very exciting. Looking forward to that. We'll be the game's on the Wednesday and we'll be recording on the Thursday as always. But yeah, we'll be back. Oh, Alan might not be back next week.
Alan. Just let the listeners know, I'm actually just going on holiday. I've not been fired.
No.
That I'm aware of.
So, you're going on holiday and when?
Thursday.
He probably won't be here next week.
Then. Yeah, there's a good chance.
I mean, I definitely won't be here next week. I can confirm. And the week after.
Yeah, we've got you covered, Alan. Don't you worry about that.
Great.
So you can listen when you're on holiday.
Run that back.
I'll run it by you. Alan Edgar, it's been a pleasure as always, sir.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night and good luck. Chris Fossamani, speak to you soon.
It's been great. So it has.
I'm Chris Gallagher from Alan Edgar, from Christopher Samani. This has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.